This is Audible.
Penguin Random House Audio presents Resurrecting Home by A. American. Read for you by Duke Fontaine. Chapter 1. Being home felt good, even if it wasn't our home, per se. The house next to Danny and Bobby was as good as we were going to get, considering our own home was trashed. The guy who owned this house had left it during the mortgage crisis, lucky for us. We tried to make the best of a less-than-perfect situation, and so far, so good. Mel and the girls took it all in stride, which I was thankful for. Little Bit hardly commented on the change in location, and Leanne and Taylor didn't grumble. A teenager's way of saying they're okay with it. Just being back in the old neighborhood provided a sense of normalcy and familiarity we hadn't had in months. For that, I was grateful. Our little community had grown so much in the past few weeks with the arrival of Fred and Jess, who were slowly getting settled. Now that there were plenty of bodies willing to help with the cleanup, progress in the neighborhood was moving along nicely. Everyone pitched in without being asked. We'd been at it for a couple of days now, and things were really starting to come together, particularly in our house. Danny's house was another story entirely. He and Bobby always kept an orderly home, unlike mine, where everything had a place, and that place just happened to be wherever I laid something down. Seeing their home in such a condition was hard on them. They never said much about it, but I knew otherwise. I could tell from some of Danny's exasperated looks and Bobby's sighs that the never-ending cleanup of the house was getting to them. Given that, I tasked everyone to pitching in one summer day. It was a hot day. The days were getting hotter and hotter as summer began to stretch out into longer days, but everyone took it in stride. I was in charge of dragging out what was left of their shattered lives and dumping it in the truck. Turning the wheelbarrow up, I dumped another load into the bed of the little red truck, the same one Reggie had acquired from the kid. We'll never know for sure if he had anything to do with Reggie's niece or not. Both of them are dead now. Thad had gotten that little rig running and backed it up against Danny's back porch as we cleaned. Watching the dust settle, I thought about Reggie and how we discovered the truck. It seemed so long ago that I'd walked to the dry bed of Baptist Lake and found those bodies, or what was left of them. I can still see Reggie's face when he said he had to take her to her mama. Now the truck was being used around the neighborhood, albeit sparingly, as gas was a premium worth more than gold. As I worked, I could hear the voices of my friends as they helped clean out the trash from the inside of Danny and Bobby's place. We had been at it for a couple of days, sorting out what was worth saving and what was beyond salvage, and hauling the latter out. The truck made life easier, but we still had to figure out what to do with all the debris. The trash man certainly wasn't coming on Thursday, and there was no way to get to the dump, so we had to divide the haul into what could be burned and what couldn't. If it wouldn't, we'd hauled it off to a pit in the back of Danny's property. A hand landed on my shoulder. Break time's over. I looked over to see Thad standing beside me. Yes, sir, boss, I said with a smile, and wheeled the barrow back into the house. Thad smiled and shook his head as he followed me inside. It was quite a scene inside. Mel, Taylor, and Leanne were going through the kitchen, putting broken dishes and various electric kitchen appliances in stacks, along with the silverware and cooking utensils that were scattered all over it. Bobby was kneeling down on the floor, wiping her forehead with the back of an oversized work glove. Danny pushed a shovel into the pile in front of her, and she used her hands to push more into it, and it was dumped into the bin. When we began the cleanup, the floor was littered with everything from broken dishes and furniture to general dirt and grime. The house had been thoroughly trashed, searched from top to bottom. Whoever had gone through the house had ransacked every drawer, closet, and cabinet. In most cases, The contents were tossed onto the floor, then walked over repeatedly. The worst was the malicious destruction of furniture and other household items. It made me mad to think about someone coming into another person's home simply for the sake of destruction. "What'd you guys decide to do about this sofa?" Jeff asked, lounging on the torn and slashed settee. "Take it out, we'll burn it," Danny said. "If we put a sheet over it, we could still use it," Bobby said. Danny shook his head. "I don't know, it's pretty torn up. What else are we going to sit on?" Danny shrugged. "I guess you're right, let's keep it, at least till we find something better." Jeff jumped up. "All right, so the sofa stays, but I gotta say, man, this recliner has seen better days. Let's toss it. Thad, want to grab the other end of this chair?" he said, as he made his way toward Danny's beloved recliner. With a smile, I looked at Danny. "Should we observe a moment of silence?" "I can't watch. Just get it out of here." Thad laughed as he and Jeff hefted up the chair and waddled toward the door. With most of the floor now swept clean, I grabbed a bucket and filled it at the sink, marveling at having running water again. Using a crusty mop that was lying in the kitchen, I began to mop the floor, starting at the front door. "I don't want any footprints on my clean floor," I shouted, as I swept the sopping mop back and forth. "So should we use the back door then?" a voice asked from behind me. I turned to see Jess and Fred on the porch. "Hey, how's it going in your new place? Getting settled in?" "We're getting there. Fred wants a favor," Jess said. Fred asked with pleading eyes, "Can you take me to the camp, please? I want to go see Eric."
Sure. Just let us finish up here, and we can take a ride over there. Are you going to stay there or come back?"
Fred nodded her head. "Oh, I'm coming back. Hopefully Eric can, too."
"All right, then. Just give us a bit to wrap this up here, and we'll head out."
"Thanks so much. I really appreciate it, Morgan," Fred said with a smile. Thad and Jeff were on the back porch, having unceremoniously dumped Danny's chair in the truck. I glanced over to see Thad hugging Jess. It brought a smile to my face, remembering when we all first met.
"Careful, Jess."
"How do you know you can trust that guy?" I shouted, still swinging the mop back and forth. She turned her head and stuck her tongue out at me, which made me grin. Fred was looking around the living room.
"Wow, you guys have really made a lot of progress in here."
Bobby had gotten to scrubbing the floors on her hands and knees. She looked around the house.
"You should have seen it before all this happened. It was spotless.
Danny and I worked so hard to get it in shape. It'll never be the same again."
"Hey, at least you've still got your house," Mel said, examining a blender sitting on the counter.
"Besides, we all know that you and Danny will have this place spick and span in no time. Y'all are like Martha Stewart."
Danny looked up slyly.
"Except for the insider trading and going to prison part," he said, getting a laugh from me and Thad. Fred chuckled.
"Whatever I can do to help, I'd be happy to."
"Mel, how's your place working out?"
"I like our new house, Fred," Little Bit said brightly.
"Me too. My room's bigger. You should come over and see it soon," Leanne said. In the past few weeks, the older girls had been getting along with Jess and Fred. Leanne's mood had improved considerably since they had become part of her community. It was nice to see her connecting to girls closer to her age.
"Oh, I think it's a little early for visitors, but soon enough you and Jess should come through.
We are neighbors now, after all."
"Speaking of neighbors, have you guys seen Brandy and Tyler today?" Mel asked.
"Yeah, we saw them on our way over here."
"They're doing the same thing you guys are, cleaning up," Jess replied.
Little Bit jumped.
"I want to go play with Edie. Mom, can I go?"
Mel chuckled. "Go ahead, you can go play."
Little Bit leapt up in the air, pumping her fist, and took off at a run for the gate. Jess and Fred laughed at the sight of her little legs running.
Fred was shaking her head.
Where does all that energy come from when they're so young?
Bobby looked up from her scrubbing.
I want to know where it goes as you get older.
Thad laughed.
If you figure that one out, be sure and let me know.
We worked for another hour or so. The extra hands helped to move the process along more quickly. With all the damaged furniture and trash removed, the place looked a lot better, almost back to normal.
Danny looked around the living room, nodding to himself approvingly.
Bobby was still hard at work, scrubbing the counters, a frustrated look on her face. It would take a little longer for her to feel at home. Seeing how things were coming together, I figured it would be a good time to run to the camp. Sarge's plan to take the camp without a fight worked out, almost. He'd been wounded by Eric in a terrible mistake that he'd paid for in return. With the guard now in control of the camp, I wondered about the fate of the DHS troops, now under their control. It seemed to me unlikely that they could keep them locked up for too long. Having to feed and care for them, as well as the possibility of an uprising, made for a very touchy situation. It was an issue I hoped Sheffield and Livingston were working on.
Danny, you want to go up to the camp with me? I asked.
He looked around again.
Nah, I'm going to stay here. There's still a lot to do.
I could see him doing a mental checklist of everything that needed to be done.
I'll go with you, Thad volunteered.
Right on, brother, I said. Let's head out of here in 5, I said, nodding to Jess and Fred.
How long will you guys be gone? Mel asked.
Not long. We're just going to check on Eric. Maybe bring him back here if he's up to it.
Which one's Eric again? Mel asked.
He's the DHS guy that helped Jess and Fred get out. He was trying to bust them out of the jail when Sarge and the boys showed up. I guess Fred's got a thing for him.
Bobby pursed her lips.
Just what we need, someone else to feed.
I looked at her and smiled.
We'll be fine. We know how to make do.
But speaking of food, how are we doing on it? How much do we have left?
Not much, Mel said.
A worried look crossed her face. Morgan, I know you want to help people out, but the more people we bring in here, the less food for everyone else.
You gotta remember that.
I sighed.
When I get back, we'll do an inventory of everything and see where we are.
That won't take long, Bobby said sarcastically.
I smiled sweetly at both of them. Ladies, we'll be sure to have everything covered.
You ready to go, Thad?
He nodded and picked up his shoddy from the table, heading toward the door. I kissed Mel on the cheek and followed him out, cutting through the fence to my place.
Rolling toward the gate, Thad said,
Mel and Bobby are right. We're going to have to do something about food.
I nodded in agreement. We need to try and get a garden started here, with what seeds we have left. It's a shame we planted some already at the river, I said.
They won't go to waste, at least. Sarge and the guys will take care of them.
I know they will, but that doesn't help us much right now. We gotta think of some alternate means.
Thad snorted. Alternate means? Story of my life.
I punched him on the shoulder. We'll get that garden going ASAP.
There's only so much to hunt. Plus, I think the cold weather is pretty much over, Thad said.
I nodded.
It'll take some time, but it's worth it.
In the meantime, we use what we have. And we've got the pigs and chickens. There's fish in Danny's pond, but they won't last forever if we press it too hard.
You still ain't answered my question.
What are we going to do?
I looked at him.
I guess we're going to have to get used to being hungry, I said, with a half-hearted laugh.
Seriously, though, it's going to be tough. It's going to take a lot of work to keep everyone fed.
I think we're up to the challenge.
As we rolled to a stop at the end of the road, Fred and Jess climbed in, chatting excitedly. I looked back at Fred, then over at Thad and smiled.
Fred had made a decent attempt at cleaning up her face and brushing her hair. She looked excited, like a schoolgirl. It was a short ride to the camp, mostly spent brainstorming with Thad over food supplies. When we reached the gate, Fred bounced up and down in her seat, but Jess appeared more reserved, a serious look in her eyes. I knew the camp had painful memories for both of them, but I was happy that Fred got to have a little moment of happiness. The guardsmen at the gate waved us through, and I could immediately see that the camp had a different feel now. It was more relaxed, but there was still an air of tension over the place. I don't know if I could ever shake that feeling, knowing what had gone down here. I could tell by Jess's face that she couldn't either. As we drove around, we took in the sights. There were still work crews scattered around, though their numbers were smaller, and there was no armed guard standing over them. It looked as though an inventory of sorts was going on, with substantial piles of crates and boxes piled around being counted. A side-by-side ATV stopped beside us as we rode through the camp. Ian sat back with a foot up on the roll bar, grinning like a shit-eating dog. Jamie was beside him, her head rocked back. I stopped beside them. "What's up, Gomer?" I asked. Ian grinned. "Not taxes. Hard dicks will always be up, though." Jamie slapped him lightly on the head. "Shut up, Ian." Thad and I both laughed. "You two are still up to your antics, I see. What's going on around here? You guys doing an inventory?" Thad asked. Ian nodded. "Yeah, trying to see what's here. These federal boys have a load of shit piled up." Jamie pushed her sunglasses up onto her forehead. "It's a pain in the ass." She looked in the back of the truck and waved. "Hey, Fred, Jess." I looked back at one of the nearby tents, a cordon of boxes stacked in front of it like a tunnel. Looking back at Ian, I asked, "Find anything interesting yet?" Ian waved a dismissive hand. "A ton of shit. Interesting to see what the DHS had been stockpiling." "Speaking of the feds, what's happening with them?" Thad asked. Ian stretched. "We're keeping them corralled for now. I don't know what they're going to do with them, though. No orders have come down yet. Same old game, hurry up and wait." "How have the civilians been? Any trouble from them?" Thad asked. Ian shook his head. "Not really. They seem a little unsure of things. They'd grown accustomed to being told what to do, so they're having a hard time dealing with the level of freedom they have now." "I can see that being a bit of a shock. Have any of them left?" "Yeah, some have. Several, actually. Honestly, I thought there would be more, though. I've talked to a bunch of them. The ones that are still here all pretty much say the same thing. Where are we going to go? The ones that left were ones that were grabbed up. A lot of prepper types and real hardheads." I laughed. "I can relate to them." Thad looked at me. "Yeah, you damn sure are hard-headed." Ian laughed. "I could just see you two in here. But that's why we've rounded these guys up. It just isn't right what they were doing." "You can't keep them here forever," I said. "No, the captain is working on something. We think a couple of the feds have blended into the crowd, trying to hide." "Why in the world would the people here allow that? I mean, they weren't exactly nice to the folks in the camp. You'd think they'd get ratted out quick," Thad said. Ian looked off towards some of the tents. "You'd think, but we've learned there are some folks here who like the idea of being under federal control. Hell, some of them even managed to join the feds while it was still under their control. Till we showed up, anyway." "Why in the hell would they want to do that?" I asked, shaking my head. "They got better food and more freedom that way. And some of them just wanted to boss folks around," Ian replied. Thad grunted. "If you can't beat them, join them. Something like that. What are you guys doing here?" I jerked my head toward the girls. They were chatting with Jamie, who had climbed off the ATV and was speaking with animated gestures at the window. Ian nodded.
Let me guess. Eric?
Thad laughed.
You know it.
Where is he? I asked. He's over in the mess hall, where Kay works.
How's he doing?
He's mobile, up and moving around. That arm will be in a sling for quite some time, though. Old Ted did a number on him.
He's lucky to be alive, considering who he shot to start with, I laughed.
Fred patted my seat eagerly, clearly finished with her conversation.
Hell yeah, he's lucky to be alive.
Now can we go see him?
Ian laughed. Better get a move on.
And hey, come by Brass Alley before you guys leave. Sarge and Mike are over there. As I started the truck up, Thad asked,
How is the old man?
Jamie was back at the ATV, holding on to the roll bar and looking over the top.
Grumpy, she yelled.
Ian laughed.
Yeah, he's limping around. He fashioned himself a real nice cane out of cypress.
It's a walking stick. Believe me, you don't want to call it a cane, Jamie said.
I laughed and looked at Thad, who clearly had the same idea that I did.
Rock, paper, scissors?
Thad smiled and held up a fist. On three, I had paper. Thad had scissors.
Looks like you're calling it a cane, Thad said, grinning ear to ear.
Ian shook his head.
We warned you.
He pointed at me.
Remember that.
I dropped the truck into gear, and we made our way toward the mess hall, following signs that identified the route. In the rearview mirror, I could see Fred's face as she craned her neck to see up the road. We pulled up in front of the mess tent, and Fred was out before we even stopped. Jess was close behind her. Thad looked over and smiled.
Think she's in a hurry?
I laughed as we got out and went inside. The dining hall was empty, but we could hear voices in the back, behind the swinging doors. Thad got a mischievous look on his face and slapped his palms into the doors, throwing them open with a bang. There was a yelp as I came through behind him. Kay was holding her chest, eyes wide.
Damn it, Thad! You scared the hell out of us! Jess shouted, then started to laugh.
She was quickly joined by Fred, Eric, and Kay, who was trying to catch her breath. Thad held his hands out.
What'd I do?
I stepped around him.
Told him not to do it.
Thad shook his head.
Thanks, buddy.
I winked in reply.
How's his shoulder? I asked Eric.
He looked down at the sling supporting his arm.
It is. About all I can say for it.
Don't listen to him. It's healing real well.
I change the dressing every day, Kay said. It's going to take a long time to get it back up to speed.
It'll probably never be the same again, Eric added.
Once you get out of here, I'll take care of it, Fred said with a warm smile.
He smiled back at her. It was clear that there was mutual affection. Kay looked at her.
You're not taking him, are you?
Fred looked at Eric and shifted back from foot to foot.
Well, that's actually why I came here.
Do you want to go back to Morgan's neighborhood with us, Eric? Before Eric could reply, the back door to the kitchen opened. Jess and Fred both let out a gasp and started to run.
I forgot to tell you, girls, Kay shouted.
Jess slammed into Mary, almost knocking her over, and wrapped her up in a tight embrace. Fred came up behind them and wrapped her arms around them both.
You're crushing me! Mary choked out.
Jess let go.
Sorry, sorry, I'm just so happy to see you. How are you? She said, wiping tears from her face.
I'm okay. Getting better, Mary answered with a smile.
It's good to see you, girls.
We were so worried about you. You were like in shock or something.
We didn't know what was wrong with you, Fred said.
Jess shot her a look. A pained expression flashed across Mary's face.
I'm better now. Getting better every day,
Mary smiled and looked at Kay. Thanks to Kay. She's really kind. Kay gave her a dismissive wave. I haven't done nothing. Mary, you should come with us. Get out of this place, Fred said. Yeah, come with us. We're staying in Morgan's neighborhood. It's safe there. You need to come with us, Jess added.
Oh, shit. Just what we need. The girls will just love this.
Adding even more people to the group. Mary looked over at me and Thad.
So you're the famous Morgan.
I smiled.
Don't know about famous. Infamous, maybe.
I've heard a lot about you. Mary looked at Jess. She talked about you all the time. Jess said you saved her.
Don't know about that. She just wouldn't take no for an answer, so I was forced to listen to her yammering for days and days.
Jess looked over and said, Hey! Which got a laugh out of Thad. Mary looked at Thad. And you must be Thad. Thad's grin quickly vanished.
Yes, ma'am.
Mary smiled.
I've heard a lot about you, too.
Now I was laughing as Thad was clearly flushed and getting a little embarrassed. Looking at him, I said,
All lies, I'm sure.
Mary walked up and offered her hand to me. It's nice to finally meet you. I shook her hand gently and replied,
Likewise.
Stepping over to Thad, she again offered her hand. And you? Nice to meet you. Jess talked about you two so much, it's almost as if I already know you. Thad took her hand and with a nod of his head, said,
Pleasure.
Mary held his gaze a moment, making Thad even more uncomfortable before releasing his hand. Mary, are you coming? Jess asked. Mary looked at Kay, then back to Jess. I want to, I'd love to go with you, but I'm afraid. Mary paused, her eyes drifting to the canvas wall of the kitchen tent. As bad as it is here, at least I know what it is. And with the army controlling the camp now, I feel safer. I just wish those people in the black uniforms were gone.
That may or may not happen, Mary, I said gently.
We talked to a few of our buddies in the know, and there's not a plan for what to do with them yet.
But you're welcome to come with us. There's plenty of room, I said.
Knowing what she'd been through, there was no way I would refuse to allow her to join Jess and Fred.
Yeah, we'll all be together again, like old times, Fred said.
Mary's eyes dropped. I don't much care for the old days.
Oh, I didn't mean that,
Fred was saying before Kay cut her off, putting a hand on her arm.
She knows.
You'll be safe there, Mary. There's a lot of people, and it's really nice, Jess said. We even have running water.
Are you sure there's room for more people? Eric asked.
Plenty of room, Eric. You and Mary both are welcome, and so is Kay, I said. We've got plenty of space, but there's lots of work to do to get the houses into shape. It's not exactly relaxing, but we're doing all right, Thad added.
Well, I wouldn't be much help, Eric said, looking at his wounded shoulder.
That's all right. We have to man the barricade at the end of the street.
Your eyes still work, and I'd wager you could wield a pistol all right, I said.
Eric nodded. Oh, yeah. I can handle a pistol, no problem.
Then you can help out.
And when the shoulder is ready, we have plenty of physical therapy for it,
Thad said with a smile. Out of the corner of my eye, I caught Mary looking at him, a smile on her face.
What about food? You said there are a lot of people there already.
Is there going to be enough food for everyone? Eric asked.
Food's always an issue, and always will be. But we get by, Thad said.
Eric looked at Kay.
You still staying here, Kay?
She nodded. I'm still needed here. She patted his good shoulder. But you go ahead and go. I'll be fine.
You're definitely welcome to stay, Eric. But in the meantime, while you guys sort this out,
I'm going to go find the old man, I said.
Thad clapped his hands.
I'm going too. I gotta be there for this conversation.
Giving Thad a sour look, I said,
we'll be back.
We decided to walk to the command post, or Brass Alley, as Ian called it. As we walked, we surveyed the camp. Guardsmen and refugees alike were moving freely about. Even though I had only been here once before, I could see a change in some of the residents. Put simply, they looked more at ease than they had under the control of the DHS. We passed two tents where people were hanging around, some lying on their bunks, others sitting on various improvised seats outside. Other tents were empty, though obviously lived in, the inhabitants off on some sort of task. At one of them, we saw Perez and a couple of other guardsmen, along with a number of people sorting boxes and crates. He smiled at our approach.
Hey, Morgan, Thad, what's up?
Hey, Perez, how's tricks? I asked.
His smile faded as he took a quick glance over his shoulder.
Keep an eye on things, he told one of the soldiers. A stern-faced young man in ACU digital camo nodded and turned back to the people. Perez jerked his head and started to walk.
What's going on here? Thad asked.
Perez shook his head.
We're trying to get a handle on what sort of supply situation this place is in, but people are stealing them faster than we can count them.
That why you guys are standing over them?
It's not like we're making them work. Most of them volunteer. But we're finding out quickly that a lot of them do because they want to see what we have. Some of them got sticky fingers, is all I'm saying.
I looked back at the work group.
Can't say I blame them. I mean, they were essentially prisoners for a long time.
True, but they aren't anymore. They've got the freedom to do what they want, go where they want. We're giving them some supplies, but rationing them out. But you can tell some people don't want to play fair. The captain is already talking about banishing some of them from the camp.
That bad already? Thad asked.
Don't get me wrong. It's not like everyone here is out for grabs. But there are cliques here, and a couple of them are vying for power.
I turned back to face the trail we'd walked down and jutted my chin.
Like that tent by the entrance, with those guys sitting around out front?
Perez nodded.
Yeah, that's one of them.
Looking back at Perez, I said, you guys better put the kibosh on that with the quickness.
He nodded.
We're hoping to. We've started by cutting rations for groups like that one. They're taking more than their fair share.
I mean, when it comes down to it, if you're healthy and strong, you shouldn't be here. They should be out taking care of themselves.
I snorted.
It's harder than you think, my friend.
Don't get me wrong. I know it's hard. But there ain't no more free lunch. The gravy train has been derailed.
Thad chuckled.
That's an understatement.
I thought about what it would mean to be part of this camp, to be liberated from it, and then find yourself being booted out the door.
It isn't going to matter much longer anyway, Perez quipped, still looking at the group lazing in front of the tent.
Why's that? Thad asked.
This was a detention facility. Now it's not, and it's not going to be a refugee camp. Sheffield got word from higher-ups that we're not in the refugee business. He doesn't like it, but he was told we won't be resupplied, that there simply isn't enough to support camps like this.
There were others? I asked.
Perez nodded.
Still are in some places. DOD is making an effort at taking them down, but we don't have the usual resources at our disposal, which is part of the reason they want these people to get back to taking care of themselves.
It's not easy, you know.
We're barely getting by, and we're more prepared than most, I said.
Perez nodded.
But you are getting by, that's the point. Your little community was actually mentioned in the discussions. The fact that you guys are making a go of it.
If you can do it, so can everyone else.
I understand that, but a lot of people simply don't have the knowledge. Hell, any one of us alone would be up shit creek, but with everyone working together, we'd do all right, I said.
It's a harder way of living, for sure. Takes a lot of work, Thad offered.
We know it isn't going to be easy on these folks. The brass up the command chain are trying to find the FEMA stockpiles. They haven't given any of it out yet. If we can find it and organize transport, we're going to try and hand it out.
FEMA isn't working to help? Thad asked.
Perez's face contorted. Shit, no. All that talk about stockpiles in case of emergency was just that. The Marines found a couple of them up in Virginia somewhere and started giving it out, but it got ugly. That's the other part of the problem. Everyone is in so much need that whenever something is available, they act like animals. Remember seeing video from any third world country when food was being handed out? The crowds and chaos? That's what it gets like. We're pretty much in a third world state ourselves now.
Thad looked out across the camp.
These people act like that?
No, they're pretty calm for the most part, but they also know when and where their next meal is coming from. Most of them are happy we're here. We don't intimidate them like the DHS did, and they are basically free. Some have already left, but there are others who just want someone to take care of them.
With a small laugh, I said, yeah. There always seems to be plenty of them.
Always will be, Perez replied.
We're going to find Sarge, I said. See you, Perez.
He nodded and walked back over to his detail. As Thad and I walked back up the trail, I thought about what Perez had told us. I could understand what Perez was saying. This situation was too big for any government to deal with on an individual level.
Sure. It'd be nice to stay in a comfy little camp where someone else provided everything for you. But that just wasn't a manageable reality. The new reality was much, much harder than what we were all used to. But in some ways, it was almost better because we appreciated it more. Plus, we didn't have to worry about other things anymore. Work, taxes, traffic. Honestly, though, that was little compensation for the added difficulty of daily life. I'd happily pay my taxes if things would return to normal.
Thad and I found Sarge sitting in a chair in the sugar sand in front of the office connex, his foot up on a crate and his cane lying across his lap. Mike was lying on his back on a stack of crates beside him, his boonie hat covering his face.
Hey, fellers! What brings you two around?
Sarge called out as we approached. Mike sat up, pulling his hat on straight. I waved at Mike and gave Sarge a pat on the shoulder.
The girls wanted to come by. Fred wanted to see Eric.
Sarge nodded.
Figured that wouldn't take long, he said,
stabbing the cypress cane into the sand. Thad nudged me with an elbow. I laughed to myself and looked at the piece of wood. Sarge had done a lot of work to it. The top was a nearly perfect round ball, with three finger-like points coming up around it from the staff, as if a claw were holding it.
Nice cane. You make it? I asked.
Mike stifled a laugh. Sarge smiled and stood up.
I did. Check it out.
He took a couple of steps, using the cane to support his weight. When he passed in front of me, he planted it on the top of my toes, then leaned on it.
Ow, damn it, that hurts like hell, I shouted, but he didn't let up.
Looking me in the eye, he asked,
you like my walking stick? Yes, yes, for fuck's sake, get that thing off my toes.
By now, Thad and Mike both were roaring with laughter. Sarge snatched the walking stick off my poor foot and returned to his chair. I wiggled my toes. They hurt like hell.
You're one mean old bastard, you know that? I said, shaking my foot.
Sarge smiled broadly.
You ain't the first to say it.
and you won't be the last, my boy.
I looked at Mike. How are your toes? He shook his head, rubbing his elbow. Didn't get my toes, but he almost broke my elbow when he whacked it with that damn stick.
Thad laughed, and I looked at him.
It could have just as easily been you. Keep that in mind.
He grinned and held his fingers up like a pair of scissors. I slapped at his hand and laughed again.
Looking back at Sarge, I asked, "Why are you here anyway? Aren't you supposed to be out at the river recovering?"
Sarge jutted a finger over his shoulder.
"The captain in there called me up. He wanted me to come over to figure out what to do with all them DHS boys. Can't keep him here much longer. He got word from up the chain that we've got to move him."
"Good point. They must be getting restless."
"They starting to be trouble?" I asked.
"They tried to revolt once and figured out pretty quick that was a bad idea," Mike said.
"What happened?" Thad asked. Mike looked off toward the north side of the camp.
"I think they're still digging graves over there."
"No shit. How many were killed?" I asked.
"Just the really stupid ones," Sarge replied.
"Three killed, couple others wounded," Mike said.
"Perez said some of the refugees are giving you trouble too," Thad said.
"A little. They're just feeling their oats is all."
"They settled down pretty quick though," Sarge replied.
"Hey, not to change the subject, but how's our garden doing?" I asked.
Sarge actually seemed to brighten up.
"Doing real good. The squash is coming up pretty good, and okra is already about this high."
He held a hand about 18 inches from the ground.
"We're working on it, keeping it weeded and all."
Mike sat back up with a shot.
"We? Hell!"
He pointed at Sarge.
"That old shit ain't pulled the first weed. Me and Ted are doing all the damn work."
Sarge raised the walking stick and thumped it into the sand.
"As it should be."
Thad smiled.
"You know, Sarge, with that stick and the way you're sitting in the chair, you got a regal look about you."
Sarge smiled.
"It's good to be king."
Mike threw a small piece of wood he pried from a crate at Thad.
"Thad, you suck any harder, your damn eyes'll cross."
Thad laughed uproariously. Pointing at Mike, I said,
"If he's the king, guess that makes you the jester."
Sarge and Thad started to laugh, though Mike didn't appear to see the humor.
"All of you can go to hell," he said, giving us the finger. "Lighten up, Mikey. And hey, where's that box you had earlier?" Sarge asked.
Mike hopped down from the crates and opened a cardboard box. He removed a can from it and tossed it to Sarge. Sarge turned the can around in his hands, looked at the label, and held it out to Thad.
"Here, Thad, take that back with you guys."
Thad looked at the can inquisitively.
"Seeds?"
Sure enough, it was a can of nitrogen-packed garden seeds. A wave of relief washed over me.
"Where'd you get these?" I asked.
Sarge waved his hand over his head.
"The DHS had all kinds of shit here. Them preppers would love to get their hands on this joint."
"You know you aren't going to grow a damn thing here," I said, sweeping my arm to gesture around the camp. "It's just sand."
Sarge nodded.
"I know. That's why we haven't planted any of it yet. We're talking about planting the entire area around the cabins, but we ain't decided yet. Gotta coordinate with Sheffield and the boys about what they want to do with the supplies."
"So what's the plan with the DHS guys?" I asked.
"We're going to move them out to Frostproof. It's a bigger camp and is also under our control now. Our guard unit out of Haines City is there."
"I've seen that place. Looks like a prison," Thad said.
"Remember back in the day, how everyone was saying it was a FEMA prison? Bet they never thought it would be used for their own people," I said.
"How do you guys plan to house and feed them all? I mean, there's no food, no running water," Thad said. We're letting the boys at Frostproof work that out, Sarge said flatly. Ain't my business. Besides, they probably won't be there long. The plan as of now is to get them all over to MacDill in Tampa.
What are they going to do over there? I asked.
We can't house them forever. Some will probably be released, and the hardcore ones will be kept locked up. They've got the manpower and facilities there to handle them.
I take it from that the military is on our side in this, I asked.
Sarge nodded. For the most part, at least the ones that matter. A few small units went over to the other side, but they didn't manage to take much in the way of hardware. The real question is NORAD. No one's talked to them yet, as far as I know.
Thad's eyebrows went up.
Isn't that where they control all the nukes from?
Sarge nodded.
Yep.
It was a sobering thought to consider that with all the shit going on, we didn't know who was in control of the nuclear arsenal.
You're just full of good news, aren't you? I asked.
Sarge replied with a grin.
Thad nodded and held the can out.
These for us to keep.
What the hell you think I gave them to you for? Sarge barked. Take that case with you. There's plenty here.
Damn, thanks, I said, looking over the other 5 cans in the box. It was kind of like Christmas morning, with tomatoes, corn, green beans, yellow squash, spinach, and kidney beans, each in a sealed can.
Yeah, thanks, Sarge.
We'll get these in the ground pretty quick. Not going to help much right now, but if we can make it a couple months, it sure will, Thad said.
I nodded. It'll be a nice little project for us to work on.
We stood there for a few more minutes, shooting the shit, filling in Mike and Sarge about what we had done in our neighborhood. After promises for them to come over, I looked over at Thad.
You ready?
I asked, then looked at Sarge.
Time for us to get back. Take care of yourself.
Sarge waved a hand at me.
Y'all take care.
See you later, Mike, Thad said. Mike nodded and waved at him. We headed back for the truck to see the girls. Eric and Kay were all standing around the truck.
Y'all ready? Thad asked.
Jess nodded.
Yep, just waiting on you guys.
Eric nodded.
Yeah, I'm ready to get the hell out of here.
And thanks again for taking me in. He was holding Fred's hand, and she smiled at him, stars in her eyes.
Are you sure that you're going to be all right, Kay? Jess asked.
Concern was etched across her face. I knew how much she and Fred cared for her. Kay smiled brightly.
Oh, I'll be fine. Don't worry about me.
But you have to come back and visit. Jess wrapped her up in a hug.
Don't worry about that, we will.
Eric looked at Kay. If you need anything, just let me know. He looked at me.
You guys have a radio, right?
I nodded. Sarge knows how to get in touch with us. Eric gave Kay a hug. She patted his back.
You go be happy now.
He smiled and kissed her cheek.
I will.
But you need to be happy too. Jess looked at Mary.
Well?
Mary hesitated a moment, then looked at me and Thad.
If I won't be a burden, she said, her voice trailing off.
No burden at all. We'd be glad to have you, Thad replied.
Mary smiled.
Then I'll come. It's got to be better than this place.
Once everyone was loaded up, I started to drive out, taking a route that took us past the command complex. Sarge raised his walking stick in salute to us as we passed, and I tooted the horn at him. Out on the road, I drove down the center line, slowly weaving back and forth across both lanes. In the back seat, Eric had his face out the window as the wind blew past him. It was clear that he was happy to be outside of the camp. Mary, Fred, and Jess chatted one another up as I drove. Looking at them in the rearview mirror, I couldn't help but smile. Our little community was growing in leaps and bounds.
I just hoped we could sustain it.
I'll drop you guys off at your place so Eric can stow his stuff, I said, looking at Fred in the mirror. She nodded as I turned at the intersection of their small road. While it was going to be a little crowded, Mary was going to stay there as well. She was in no condition to stay alone, and besides, Fred and Jess were really excited to have her back as well.
What the hell is that?
Eric asked as we made the turn. Thad looked out the window.
It's a set of stocks.
That's what I thought. What the hell are they for?
Just what you think they're used for.
Don't worry. We've only used them a couple of times, I replied.
In the mirror, I saw Eric give Fred a WTF look.
She shrugged. Even though Eric was a good guy, as part of the DHS, he had been sheltered from some of the worst of what was happening. Though his reaction annoyed me, I let it go. I knew he'd be an asset, bum arm and all, and plus, if Jess vouched for him, I figured he had to be trustworthy. After dropping them all off, we went back to Danny's house, which had become the central meeting place for our burgeoning little community. Thad carried the box of seeds to the back porch where everyone was sitting. Naturally, it got everyone's attention.
What's that?
Danny asked.
Please let it be mac and cheese. Please let it be mac and cheese, Taylor said, crossing her fingers.
Thad set the box on the floor and opened it, lifting one of the cans.
Seeds.
Danny practically jumped up.
Really?
He tossed him the can.
Yeah, Sarge gave them to us.
That's great. How many are there? Danny asked, looking the can over.
6 of them. Should be enough to start a pretty good garden, I said.
What kind? Mel asked as she got up. Danny started pulling out the cans.
Tomatoes, spinach, corn, green beans, kidney beans, and squash.
Fried squash sounds good, Danny said, patting his stomach.
That's good, because we're going to need it, Bobby added. I looked at her.
What do we have left food-wise?
Some beans and rice, a little freeze-dried veggies, but with the number of people here, it isn't going to last long.
Define not long, Thad said.
Bobby looked at Mel. A week, 10 days maybe, Mel said.
Oh shit, that bad? I said.
My mind started racing. I didn't even tell them that we had invited 2 more into our neighborhood. Mel cupped her face with her hands, clearly stressed.
What are we going to do?
How long do you think before the seeds produce anything? Brandy asked. She seemed apologetic, almost, and she shot Tyler a look that seemed to say, I knew we shouldn't have come here.
It'll be a month, month and a half before we get anything out of the seeds, Thad said.
Now Brandy's face showed fear.
What are we going to do?
Tyler smiled.
We'll do all right.
It's not like we had a lot of food at the campground, you know. We had to work for it every day. Nothing's really changed. I was thinking about all this and made a suggestion.
I think we need to search every house here again, thoroughly, and check out the few we haven't been into yet.
We need to bring back anything that could be of use that we might have ignored before. Seeds, oil, salt, spices, that type of stuff. We can't be picky. Whatever we can use to stretch our supply.
Canning jars, too.
We need to keep an eye out for them, Thad said.
Right. Bring any of those we find back as well, I said.
Sounds like we have a lot to do then. Might as well start today. Maybe we should divide into 2 teams, one to get the garden plot ready and another to search the houses, Danny said. I'll start in the garden. We need to get everything into the ground as quick as possible.
If it's all right with everyone, I'll help Danny, Thad said.
We can search houses, Tyler said.
Mel looked at Brandy. If you'll watch the kids, we'll check the houses.
Okay. I feel like I should be helping, though, Brandy said timidly.
Mel laughed.
like watching them isn't work.
Brandy smiled. I guess you're right.
Cool. We've got a good little team here. I looked at Mel, Bobby, and Tyler. Let's take the truck and get Fred, Mary, and Jess. We'll work a street at a time.
What about us? Leanne asked.
You two are coming too.
We need all the help we can get.
Chapter 2. I stopped at the girls' place to let them know what was going on. Fred and Jess said they would be part of the searching team, while Mary asked if she could help with the kids, saying she had a soft spot for children. It seemed like that might be good for her to do, considering the transition she had been through. So I pointed her in the right direction. With Fred and Jess loaded up, we drove down to the end of the road to begin the hunt. It was strange being back in this area. Everywhere I looked, there was a memory of what happened before we left for the cabins. The wrecked Hummer from the day we were raided by the DHS from the camp was still sitting just inside the woods. At the intersection of the main road was the spot Reggie was killed. It got me in a brief funk, but I couldn't dwell on it. We had to keep on moving. It was a long afternoon of searching. We went house to house, checking each one very thoroughly. Every closet was opened, every drawer was rummaged through, every outbuilding was searched. Most of the houses had already been scavenged. That was obvious enough to tell in many cases, particularly when the front door was kicked open. In these houses, there was generally little, if anything, of worth. Going through the houses gave us an idea of what the people who abandoned them had gone through. Some of the houses emitted a horrible stench, just an ungodly smell. In a couple, it turned out to be the bathrooms, the toilets having been used without water to excess. Others had mold growing in them. In all of them, though, it was the bedrooms that really caught my attention. Soiled linens on the beds, filthy clothes strewn about the floors. It was as if the people just quit, gave up. While not every house was a wreck, even the cleaner ones showed some of the same signs of wear. The one thing that each house had in common, regardless of its condition, was a trash pile. Sometimes they were set far from the house, but in one particular case, the pile was outside a kitchen window. I had to laugh at the thought of simply tossing the trash out the window. Mel would go crazy if I even attempted to do that. After going through about 10 houses, we had little to show. A half-used bottle of vinegar, a can of peas, some cans of pepper. There always seemed to be pepper. With each house, spirits were flagging. After what seemed like several hours, we came across one house that we hadn't noticed before. It was set back off the road, somewhat obscured by trees, and it didn't look like anyone had tried breaking into it yet. "Everything around back is secure," Tyler reported. "I can't believe no one's been in here yet," Mel said. "I wonder what's in there," Fred asked. A lively discussion ensued. Suddenly, the house was transformed into the ship from Swiss Family Robinson, containing everything we'd need. If only we could get to it. "Why hasn't anyone gotten in? I mean, the windows aren't even broken," Tyler said. "Looks like someone beat the shit out of this one," I said, knocking on one of the windows. It was covered in scratches and strike marks and had obviously taken quite a bit of abuse at some point. "What, are they bulletproof?" Eric asked, examining them up close.
I ran my hand over it. "Doubt it. Probably has a security film on it."
"What's that?" Bobby asked.
"It's like a super secure tent. You put it on the same way."
"If it's just tent, shouldn't you be able to break it?"
"I read some stuff on it once. They claim it would take a fire axe 10 minutes to get through it. And it's expensive. This window here probably cost close to a grand to cover.
A grand?
They were trying to protect something in there, then, Tyler said.
How are we going to get in? Taylor asked, hopping from foot to foot.
Let me take a look around, I said. I walked around the house, checking all the doors. Tapping on a door off the garage, I realized it was a solid metal, commercial-grade door with a deadbolt. On the rear of the house was a set of French doors. These two turned out to be metal, and from the shattered plastic frames lying on the ground, someone had tried to break in there, too. The only other door was the front door, made of a really nice, solid wood. It was also sturdy, showing signs where someone had unsuccessfully tried breaking it with an axe.
Well? Mel asked.
I have an idea. Let me run back to the house real quick. I hopped in the truck and went back to our house and dragged my pack out. Digging around in it, I found what I was looking for and headed back. Mel looked at me as I got out of the truck, her eyes scanning my person.
Thought you were going to get something.
I held up a small black case.
I did.
What's that? Eric asked. With a smile, I said, lockpicks. Eric smiled.
Oh, that's so cool. You think you can pick it?
Mel rolled her eyes, smiling. Men and their toys. I started around the corner of the house to the garage, everyone following me curiously.
I gotta see this, Jess said.
I selected a tension wrench and rake from the kit and inserted the wrench in the lock, then went to work with the rake. After a few minutes with the rake, it was obvious it wasn't going to be that easy, so I pulled a single pick out.
What's wrong? You can't get it? Jess asked.
Without looking back, I answered. Some locks are harder to pick than others. Some you can get by raking, what I was just doing, and some you have to pick individually.
What do you mean individually? Eric asked.
Inside the lock are pins, I said. This one has 5. You've got to pick them one at a time till the lock opens. Everyone watched in silence as I worked on the lock. After another couple minutes, I felt the tension on the wrench give. Looking over my shoulder, I smiled and rotated the lock open.
You got it! Mel shouted, clapping her hands.
That's so cool! Jess said.
Dad, that is the coolest thing I've ever seen, Taylor said.
Leanne was grinning from ear to ear and nodding in agreement.
Man, I would never have thought of that, to have lockpicks, Eric said.
Yeah, me neither, Tyler added.
Let's go see what's inside, Bobby said excitedly.
Yeah, that's what I want to know too, Fred said. Only a wedge of light shone through the open door, casting strange shadows around the cavernous room. I flipped on my flashlight, the bright white LED lighting up the room.
Looks like someone left in a hurry, I said.
The floor of the garage was covered in stuff, save for a rectangle of barren concrete on the far side. I stepped in, followed immediately by Tyler, then Eric. Mel and Bobby stood at the door, looking in, but Fred brushed past them, saying, "Finders keepers." They quickly followed her, with Jess bringing up the rear.
"Shine the light over here," Eric said.
I aimed it to where he was trying to release the garage door. Tyler helped him raise the door, filling the room in the bright light of day.
"Hey, this door's open," Mel said, standing at the door to the house.
"Hang on. Don't go in just yet. Let's make sure this place is actually empty," I said, moving for the door. I looked back over my shoulder. "Who's got a gun?" There were shared looks around the garage. Then one by one, their eyes returned to me.
"You mean none of you have a gun?" I asked, shaking my head.
"Oops," Bobby said. I looked at Fred, and she and Jess simply shrugged. Eric glanced at his sling-supported arm, as if to say,
I couldn't shoot if I tried.
Tyler looked at me sheepishly and said,
I have no excuse, none at all.
I couldn't help but laugh.
Seriously, though, in the future, everyone should be armed when you leave your house.
I drew my pistol and nodded over to Tyler.
Come back me up anyway.
Tyler took a flashlight from Bobby and came up behind me as I stepped through the door. Passing through a laundry room into the kitchen, I scanned the area, which was clear. We moved into the dining room and through the rest of the house and found it to be disheveled but unoccupied. The last room we searched was the master bedroom. When I shone my light into the closet, a massive safe appeared.
Holy shit, look at the size!